Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. White captions on a black screen. November 2nd, 2007. Perugia Police Department. The address is 7 Via della Pergola. Marco, listen, do you understand there's a dead girl here? The request is from Amanda. Amanda Knox.
Amanda Canox.
Video footage gives the date, and the time is 3:10 in the afternoon. The door to a house is open. The camera zooms in on the latch, which seems to be broken. The glass in a window is smashed. The camera scans around the house. The camera looks into the bathroom. In a bedroom, an electrical lead lies on the tiled floor. A crumpled bra lies nearby. The cameraman says, "Bra." A bare foot pokes out from under a crumpled bedspread on the floor. They covered her. A folder and bag are on the bare bed. A smear like bloody fingertips on the wall. A trainer and English-Italian dictionary by a bloodstain on the floor. "Shit. Shit," says the cameraman, who follows the trail of blood.
"There are those who believe in my innocence, and there are those who believe in my guilt. There's no in between. And if I'm guilty, it means that I am the ultimate figure to fear, because I'm not the obvious one. But on the other hand, if I'm innocent, it means that everyone's vulnerable. And that's everyone's nightmare. Either I'm a psychopath in sheep's clothing, or I am you."
Slim, brown-haired Amanda Knox purses her lips as she looks at the camera. She lowers her eyes thoughtfully. A Netflix documentary. A black-and-white photo of Amanda kissing her boyfriend, Raphael. A TV interview.
"You can see this does not look like grief. Does not read as grief.
I think everyone's reaction to something horrible is different."
A Plus Pictures production.
"Your roommates, your boyfriend, the cops, they all say the same thing. They thought you were responding weird, odd, strange. What makes you strange?"
Edited and co-produced by Matthew Hamacek.
If you Google the name Amanda Knox, you get 7.1 million hits. You all know better than anybody that hundreds of thousands of those are not kind.
Executive producers Adam Del Deo, Ben Kottner, Lisa Nishimura.
"She-devil with an angel face, heartless manipulator, concertante of sex."
Produced by Mette Heider, Stephen Robert Morse.
"Were you into deviant sex? Insensitive question, but hey, we got to get to what it is. This fuels the doubt. Did you have any type of experimental activities there you're embarrassed to talk about?"
Directed and produced by Rod Blackhurst and Brian McGinn.
"Did you kill Meredith Kircher?"
"No."
"Were you there that night?"
"No."
"Do you know anything you have not told police?" "Do you know anything?"
"No."
Blurry white words slowly come into focus on a black screen. Amanda Knox. Amanda driving through a town. 2016, Seattle, Washington. It's evening as Amanda parks her dark SUV outside a whitewashed rural house. She turns off the headlights, gets out and walks round to the passenger side. She opens the door and reaches in to get a couple of plastic bags of shopping. Amanda locks her car by remote and walks to the house. Inside, she stands at the kitchen sink, chopping an onion. Wearing a dark, baggy sweater, Amanda moulds ground beef and chopped onion into a ball in her hands.
"Before Italy, I had a happy life.
A home video.
All right, Amanda. Are you excited to see David?
David,
the statue of David.
Oh,
God
good
damn.
One.
I was quirky, and I was okay with that, and I was ridiculous, and I was okay with that. I thought of myself as, like, a warrior princess. I'm like Xena.
Amanda cooks in her kitchen.
I remember thinking, okay, I'm different. I'm my own person, but I'm going to find my place.
Yeah, I know.
She strokes a dark cat, then carries on with the cooking.
Going into college, I felt a little behind.
One shot, Amanda.
Don't you dare.
It was one and a half, okay?
It was one shot.
I didn't depend on myself much. And I felt like it was very important for me to get out of my comfort zone and see if that made me turn into an adult. Italy has so much history. Ruins, art, vineyards. And I thought, I will find myself in this new place.
So are you excited to go live in Italy?
Fucking yeah, bitch!
A view from a vehicle traveling along a rural road flanked by trees and meadows. Perugia, Italy. A view of hills in the distance and an old white church.
Those first weeks, I was discovering what the city was.
Video of a lively band playing in a street. Dark-haired Meredith Kircher.
I was living with these Italian women and a British girl my age who was super sophisticated. And we had this beautiful house that overlooked this valley. Like, I was owning it.
A photo of Amanda grinning. The sun hangs low over the sleepy town.
I was expecting that I was going to be part of this scholarly program. And it was zero work.
The town at night.
And so I thought, okay, I might as well get a job.
A bar.
Patrick Lumumba was trying to get his bar off the ground. And he hired me, hoping it would bring in customers.
I swear to God, I don't know what it is about people who think that guys are not attractive physically, but...
She makes an okay sign.
In Seattle, I was cute. In Italy, I was the beautiful blonde American girl. That I had never been before.
A caption, 1 week before murder. Raphael Solicito.
I went to a classical music concert, and there was this girl alone. She was very, very pretty. And she, when I looked at her, she looked at me back. I was that so shy that even if she looked at me and she smiled at me, I was turning back and said, is she looking at somebody on my back? It was no, it was me. So after I realized it, I said, why not stalking?
He immediately recognized from my accent that I was American or spoke English, and so he started speaking me in English because he can. Or at least, kinda.
Pigeons perched on the side of a building. A picturesque stone archway, a view looking down over the town.
I showed her a beautiful panorama of Perugia, which for me was very romantic, and I had my heart beating so fast, like, you know, like, oh, there's the Romans now. And I kissed her.
compared to so many other guys who were just automatically like, hey, baby. Like, he was super nice, and I was completely charmed, and yeah.
Well, we went to home. I started to smoke, to try to prepare a joint or something like that, but then we thought about something different. And the night closed with the happy ending.
A high view of the town by night, with a tall church in the center.
I had never been in love before. From there on out, like, as soon as I got out of class, we were going on walks together and getting pizza and going to the outdoor market, and he wanted to get me a perfume because all Italian ladies have perfumes. It was just a week, but we spent every single day with each other, taking pictures, smoking pot, and making love.
Houses and apartment blocks overlooking the valley. November 2nd, 2007. Good evening from the Umbria TV News, which opens with sad news. Meredith Kircher, an English 22-year-old, was found dead in her house on Via della Pergola. Everything discovered so far suggests she's been murdered.
Tutti gli elementi finora emersi indicano che si tratta di un omicidio.
Video footage of balding lead prosecutor Giuliano Mignini arriving on the scene and shaking hands with an investigator before going into the house. He's interviewed. The crime scene, it's a memory that will always be with me. There was blood everywhere. Police photos of the crime scene. Bloody smears, Meredith's bare foot. The girl's naked body had been covered. There were signs that she'd been violently held down, mostly on her arms. Her throat had an extremely deep wound. It struck me because of how deep it was.
La gola, una lesione estremamente profonda che mi ha colpito perché era molto pesante come lesione.
I asked, is a monster responsible for this? Mignini and other investigators walk around the outside of the building. Amanda and Raphael gaze into each other's eyes and kiss. Outside, I saw two young people. They were comforting each other with an affection inappropriate for the moment.
Distonici rispetto al momento.
Video footage from outside the house, zooming in on a balcony where forensic investigators in white overalls can be seen through the window. Make sure to shoot the body bag if it comes out. Cameras flash as investigators carry out Meredith's corpse in a black body bag. Enough, please stop it. As a courtesy, please stop. Have some dignity. Newspaper headlines. House of Horrors. Maniac cuts throat of exchange student. Police hunt killer. Il mistero di Meredith. Nick Pisa, freelance journalist, The Daily Mail.
A murder always gets people going. Bit of intrigue, bit of mystery. A whodunit. And we have, yeah, this beautiful picturesque hilltop town in the middle of Italy. It was a particularly gruesome murder, throat slit, semi-naked, blood everywhere. I mean, what more do you want in a story? I mean, all you're missing is maybe, I don't know, the royal family and the Pope or something like that as well. This was the first time I'd ever covered a case in Perugia, so obviously the first thing you need to do is get to the main players. Obviously, to get the facts, you've got to be on the scene, really. You've got to be Johnny on the spot.
Nick steps onto a balcony.
The authorities in Perugia were under an intense amount of pressure. As we say in Italy, there's this phrase, bella figura, a beautiful figure, a beautiful impression, keeping up appearances. They found themselves on the international media map. They just wanted to show that they were capable of dealing with something of this scale.
A Ryanair passenger plane touches down on a runway. A caption, Meredith Kircher's family. The Kirchers disembark. Stephanie Kircher, Meredith's sister, at a press conference.
Nothing can prepare you for the news we received on Friday evening. Words can't even describe how we feel right now, other than utterly devastated at the tragic loss of our daughter and sister Meredith. We feel it's no exaggeration to say that Meredith touched the lives of everyone she met with her infectious, upbeat personality, smile and sense of humour. We loved Meredith then, we love her still, and she's still very much a part of our family forever.
Meredith's mother, wearing round glasses, sits stony-faced. Giuliano Mignini says Meredith's mother came and she asked to see her daughter, and I remember she was absorbed in silence.
E ricordo rimase in assorta in silenzio.
And then she made a gesture. She asked if she could give her a kiss. I have a family. I'm the father of four girls. Therefore, I understood her immense pain.
Ho una famiglia, sono padre di quattro ragazze. Quindi l'ho colto questo dolore immenso.
a bird's eye view looking down at a silvery white car driving along a quiet, narrow road. Mignini is at the wheel. I am Catholic, so I believe in two things that are hard to reconcile. That God runs the world. But also that man has free will and must be held responsible for their actions.
Nel compiere le loro azioni che vanno ad essi riferite proprio in quanto esseri liberi.
Video footage of police outside the crime scene. Uniformed officers stand outside the door. An investigator talks on his mobile. Mignini puts on his glasses. Investigators are working around the clock to figure out the motive. People she knew and possible romantic relationships. Investigators are not ruling out any motive. Tomorrow they'll do the autopsy. A bearded man talks to an investigator with Polizia Scientifica on the back of his boiler suit. Night's fallen. Freelance journalist Nick Pisa.
The whole place was just awash with journalists. So any nugget, any scrap, anything new, you were just trying to get it out ahead of your competitor. We were all camped outside the mortuary waiting for the pathologist to come out. I spoke good Italian, and I think also they liked the fact that, wow, I've got a British journalist talking to me. I'm now a big star as well. And I was allowed to come report the facts.
The post-mortem report.
And the post-mortem concluded that there had been some sort of sexual interference with Meredith's body. Traces of male DNA in her body. And I remember him telling me that there were also little nicks in her chin, as if someone had been taunting her, sort of torturing her. That's when the police and the prosecution started saying that it was a group crime, a sex game gone wrong. And we managed to get it out to the British press before anyone else, and that was a scoop that we had, and it made headlines all over the world.
Next name on a story.
To see your name on the front page with a great story that everyone's talking about, it's just a fantastic buzz. I mean, I'd like to say it's like having sex or something like that, you know?
News footage of undertakers walking with a hearse. The roof is piled high with flowers. Meredith's mother in black walks to the doorway of a church and looks back. Four undertakers in black walk into the church, carrying Meredith's coffin on their shoulders. Flowers lie on the lid. Photographers take pictures of two men holding up a huge banner with Meredith's picture and the message, "With greatest love from all your friends in Perugia. Addio, Meredith." Slowed down video of Meredith smiling on a street.
Meredith was my friend of a few weeks. We weren't lifetime best friends. But I was so shocked by what happened to her. It made no sense. It was brutal. And it could have happened to me.
Meredith smiles among a group of people.
But I was at Raphael's apartment the night of the murder.
Meredith puts her hand over the camera.
We watched Amélie, and in the middle of watching Amélie, I got a text message from Patrick saying that I didn't have to come into work, and I was like, yes! We finished watching the movie, we made dinner, and I read to him from a German Harry Potter book. And after that, we just hung out on his bed and talked and made goofy faces at each other. And eventually that turned into kissing, which turned into the making love and then passing out.
A cloudy night sky hangs over Perugia. Day breaks over the sleepy town.
The next morning I wake up. I told him that I was going to go back to my place. So I went there. I just walked down and The first thing that I saw was that my front door was already open.
Video footage of the open house door. The cameraman goes in.
The common area was normal. My room was normal. Normal messy, but normal. And I got undressed and I walked into the bathroom. And I noticed that there was some drops of blood in the sink.
Blood on the tap and sink.
But, I mean, there are just a few drops of blood, whatever. I brushed my teeth, and then I took a shower. When I stepped out of the shower onto the bath mat, that's when I noticed the larger splotch of blood on the bath mat.
A police photo of the gray bath mat with a bloody footprint.
But there's only some spots of blood and then that, so maybe someone cut themselves, something like that. It was right after I was done blow-drying my hair that I just happened to look over into the toilet and saw that feces had been left there. That gave me the creeps. Like, all of a sudden, I got this creepy feeling like someone was in the house with me, and I was just like, oh, shit. So I went to Raphael and I talked to him about it.
I went back there. I saw all this mess. It was very weird. And I was a little bit surprised that she took a shower inside her house without having the anxiety of it.
We tried Meredith's room and the door was locked, which was very strange. And so I knocked gently and called for Meredith, and then I knocked louder and I called for Meredith, and finally I was like, Raphael, can you please, like, try to break open this door? I don't know if Meredith's in there or not. And he tried kicking it down twice, but it didn't work.
Solicito called to police hours after the murder. Hello, good morning. Listen, someone made a mess and there is a door closed, and there are also blood marks in the bathroom. Which door is closed? One of the roommates. We don't know where she is. I'm sending a police car so that we can inspect the situation.
The police, like, kicked us all out of the house, kicked down Meredith's door, and they were saying that her, like, there was blood everywhere and that her throat had been slit, and so that's how I was told that Meredith was dead.
Video footage of Amanda and Raphael outside the house, gazing into each other's eyes and kissing. Several vehicles are parked outside the house, and police officers mill around. A picturesque street of old stone buildings. Giuliano Mignini walks along the street with his hands in the pockets of his coat. I've always had a great passion for investigating. I like detective movies a lot, Sherlock Holmes, for example. He was able to get clues from seemingly insignificant events.
Sherlock Holmes, per esempio, perché proprio riusciva a cogliere particolari che sembravano insignificanti.
Video of the bedspread that had covered Meredith's body. Why was the girl covered with the blanket? A woman who is killed tends to cover the body of female victims. A man would never think to do this.
Tende a coprire il corpo nudo dell'altra donna. All'uomo, a uno sconosciuto, non verrebbe in mente questa cosa.
Video footage of inside the house. The thing that struck me the most was the break-in. Nothing had been stolen, and there was no evidence that someone had climbed the wall.
Non hanno preso niente. E mi ricordo che non c'erano sul muro tracce di arrampicatura.
A police photo of broken glass.
Immediatamente da allora.
Immediately, I could tell it was a staged break-in. It could have no other function than this: throw off suspicion from someone who has a connection to the house.
E cioè allontanare i sospetti da chi poteva essere sospettato per chi aveva una particolare relazione con quella casa.
Investigators mill around outside the crime scene. 2 days after the murder, Amanda walks past a police car.
The next day, they brought me back to my place. It was the first time I was back in my apartment after it had been closed off as a crime scene.
On the kitchen table is a sign, Polizia Scientifica 25, the knife drawer.
And they were having me go through the knife drawer to see if any of the knives were missing. So basically they were asking me to see if there was the murder weapon missing from this drawer. And it just all hit me all at once, and I became hysterical.
Magnini says she started hitting the palm of her hands on her ears, as if there was the memory of a noise, a sound, a scream. Meredith's scream. Undoubtedly, I started to suspect Amanda.
Il grido di Meredith. E allora, indubbiamente, io cominciai, devo dire, cominciai un po' a pensare ad Amanda.
A bird's eye view looking down over a road. A caption, 3 days after the murder. The police wiretap Amanda and Raphael's phones. Voice of Brett, childhood friend.
Pronto?
Amanda, it's Brett. What are you doing?
I'm just about to head home from one of Raphael's friends' place.
So is Raphael like your, like, boyfriend?
Yeah.
He's super hot.
I'll send you a picture.
Do it now, do it now.
Amanda,
I miss him so much.
Yeah, I know. I had a really bad day today. Fuck, man. Like, being in the police station, I'm incredibly nervous, and I always feel like I'm about to burst into crying because I'm just, like, so upset. But, like, I feel good now.
So oh,
I can do stuff.
Honey. Don't worry about it. Remember, when that happens, go, wait, I'm in Italy, and I'm with Raphael, and I'm 20, and I'm going to look back on this year as, like, the best year of my life.
An aerial view of cars approaching a small junction. Magnini says, the night of the 5th, we had a breakthrough in the investigation.
C'è una svolta nelle indagini.
Sollecito is called into the police station. Amanda was not called in, but she follows him anyway.
Si presenta lo stesso, lo segue.
She was waiting in the corridor of the police station, and they were starting to be very rude to me and asking me questions about what happened that night. That night, I know that I was in my apartment. I know that I spent the night with Amanda. I know she slept with me. But they were not satisfied, and they were pushing and aggressive, and they became the worst to the worst. This policeman told me that Amanda lied all the time. She was a stupid slut, a cow that didn't care about me. Your situation is very, very bad. After a long time, the reality around you turns to twists and doesn't be so clear.
Giuliano Magnini says, then Sollecito changes his version of the events. He turned his back on Amanda. He says, so far I've told a bunch of lies because she told me to say them. The truth is, I was home that night, Amanda wasn't with me, and didn't come back until 1 a.m.
Io stavo a casa, e Amanda che non stava con me, ed è tornata verso le una.
Words typed on a computer screen. Sollecito, ricordo. An official document signed by Raphael.
Mettiamoci nei panni di Amanda.
Let's put ourselves in Amanda's shoes. You go to the police station with your boyfriend. You're in a different room and don't know what he's saying. Then, at a certain point, they come to tell you, your boyfriend, he's turned on you.
Ti vengono a dire, quello che è il suo fidanzato, ti ha sganciato.
A mobile phone. Its screen lights up as a text comes through.
They wanted to prove that I had left, and they wanted my cell phone, and I was like, yes, just look at my cell phone. Like, I did not leave. I didn't have to work that night. I was supposed to work, but I didn't go to work. I didn't leave. They fiddled through it and pulled up this text message that I had sent to Patrick, which said, ci vediamo più tardi, buona serata, which literally word for word is, we will see each other later. Have a good night. I told them, like, he sent me this text message saying don't come into work, and so I said, okay, see you later then, have a good night. And they said, no, what this literally means is you are going to see someone, you made an appointment with someone, and you don't remember. Clearly your mind is fucked, and you are going to be either on our side or you're going to be on the murderer's side. And what side are you on? I got so frazzled by it, I said, I don't know what the fuck is going on. And another of the guys was like, fuck, I understand, fuck you. And like, he thought that I was yelling fuck you at him. And I was like crying, and at a certain point, a police officer slapped me behind the head and was like, remember, and then slapped me again and said, remember, like, get your brain straight. And I broke.
Words typed on a computer. Verbale di somari, Knox.
What started popping in my mind was the street in front of Raphael's apartment.
A street lamp.
My front door being open.
A printout.
Patrick in his brown leather jacket. And Meredith screaming. And I thought that meant that I was remembering that he had killed her.
Amanda's signature on a document. A police car drives through the night, its roof lights flashing.
Io sono rimasto sbalordito.
I was shocked, because what she said made her at least an accomplice to the murder. And Sollecito, why did he lie? And so I decided to have all three of them arrested.
Ha mentito. Perché l'ha fatto? E quindi ho ritenuto di disporre il fermo di tutti e tre.
Uniformed officers and investigators wearing black polizia vests come out through a doorway with the suspects. Captions name each one. Patrick Lumumba, Raphael Sollecito, Amanda Knox. Journalists and cameramen are gathered for a police press conference. We feel very sad for the girl that died, yet there is also great satisfaction for the Perugian police for having found the answers in such short time. The press put pressure on us, and as a result, we felt the responsibility for a city that wanted a definitive answer right away. I can't thank everybody enough in this entire investigation for their professionalism as well as their moral commitment. Nick Pisa.
Caso chiuso, case closed. You'd have thought they'd busted some sort of mafioso godfather the way that they were reacting.
Old film of Nick chatting and shaking hands with Mignini.
The lawyers are the key ones. I would get alongside one of the lawyers. He would hand me over the statement. I think the photocopying places in Perugia must have made a fortune those days. We had these details coming out. The friends of Meredith were telling us how Amanda had been behaving in the waiting room. One of the friends said to Amanda, I hope Meredith didn't suffer badly. Amanda said, of course she fucking suffered. She had her throat fucking cut. This police officer in this disclosure said Amanda and Raffaele were kissing each other. She was performing cartwheels and doing stretching exercises. Of course she did it. She's mad. She's complete and utter loon. I mean, who behaves like that?
An aerial view of a large complex of modern white buildings, Capani Prison. Video footage of a crowd of reporters and cameramen waiting outside the prison. Journalists swarm around Amanda's family as they walk towards the prison.
No comment. Are you still convinced about Amanda's innocence?
No comment. Guards came to my door and said, you have visitors. They put me in this special little office, and there was my mom, and she was crying, and she reached out for me and...
A prison audio recording.
I knew that I had fucked up, and I felt like I had fucked up, and then I didn't know what to do. I felt like a child again. And I knew. I was a kid. What was I pretending? I needed my mom. And...
you know, the lawyers were saying, no matter what, if you had gone in and done the deed, they just needed to know for sure the truth so that they could.
Yeah, and I'm definitely.
So we have no idea.
I had no clue because I was with Raphael at his house. Mm-hmm. The one thing that's really bugging me is why Raphael lied.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully he's in the same position you are, that he was being stressed.
I feel like they were smacking him around or something mm-hmm. like that.
The lawyer said something interesting. They said Amanda's been caught up in something that's way bigger than her because it's turned into this huge international bullshit story.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Everybody in the family has been assaulted by a meeting. It's gone crazy.
We already had good pictures of Meredith. She was a terribly attractive woman. And now we've got Amanda Knox involved as well. Pretty blonde girl. 20-something. It had that sexual intrigue, girl-on-girl crime, if you like. The pack were in their hotel room and everyone was going, Amanda Knox, tap, 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 into their computer. This picture pops up on MySpace of Amanda Knox with a machine gun, laughing hysterically as she was firing it. And we're thinking, wow, great. She's a complete and utter nut job. We had Raphael Celesto tapped him in, and there he was dressed as a mummy with a meat cleaver. I mean, you just couldn't ask for any better material to illustrate a story with.
Raffaele collects knives, he drives a nice car, he was majoring in engineering.
This guy wasn't very sexually experienced. She might have been only the second person that he'd ever had sex with. She'd sort of got her hooks into him.
She'd been seen nuzzling with a boyfriend at a local shop as they bought underwear for her. The store owner said he heard them laughing about having hot sex that night, just a day after her roommate had been found murdered.
La femme fatale, la dominatrice. Amanda, mangiatrice di uomini, Amanda the man-eater. Finally, you have her own name for herself, Foxy Noxy. It was a perfect headline, really, and a perfect name. I mean, it was a feeding frenzy for everyone, basically. I mean, you were getting front pages. I don't think I've ever had so many front pages. You know, front page after front page, page lead in the paper after page lead. Just story after story.
Lean, dark-haired Nick, wearing dark suit and ties, sits in front of a dark, mottled backdrop. A white caption. 3 weeks after his arrest, Patrick Lumumba produces an alibi and is released. Patrick's brought out to the waiting press. Patrick! How are you, Patrick? I'm good. Thank God I get to go home. Patrick, why did Amanda accuse you? What do you think of Amanda? Why did Amanda say those things? Why did she falsely accuse him? Says Magnini with a smile. Can you give me an answer? I think it's a little bit hard, huh? The only reason would be to divert the investigation away from her. Magnini travels in the passenger seat of a black hatchback.
And so in comes Giuliano Magnini. I just remember that he was a big man, very solemn.
I asked her, why did you accuse Patrick?
Why? I was stressed, I was scared,
it was after long hours, it was in the middle of the night. I was innocent and they were telling me that I was guilty.
For the record, she's crying.
I told him it was because they had said that I had met him. They had shown me his text message and said that I had met him and that I must have not remembered it because it was so traumatizing.
She kept insisting and insisting. They told me to say Lumumba's name. They told me to, they told me to. I didn't understand this. Earlier, she said that it could have been true.
In that moment, I thought it could have been true.
Usually, a person says that's true or that's not true. But Amanda had a very unusual way of reasoning. She kept going between dream and reality.
He just kept asking the question again, again and again and again. No, why did you say Patrick Lumumba? You made me believe I met Patrick Lumumba. Therefore, I said Patrick Lumumba. It wasn't the answer that he wanted, and I realized that, and I was devastated. Like, when that happened, I realized that they weren't ever going to listen to me again.
This is Amanda's weakness. She can't stand being questioned, and she also has an attitude, hostility and rebellion towards authority. It's a little bit anarchist. I don't know if there's such an attitude in Seattle. This I don't know. It's possible to speculate, of course. But instead, I choose to stick to the facts. An ornamental fountain in a dark town square. A large stone building dimly lit by a few lights. In a shadowy room, Nick Pisa is typing on his laptop.
I've always wanted to be a journalist ever since I was a kid. I mean, everyone knows Woodward and Bernstein. I mean, I wouldn't dream of putting myself in their shoes or anything. But I'm naturally nosy as well, which is always a good talent to have, if you like, if you can call it a talent, to be a journalist.
A gloomy corridor in the prison.
Amanda was in a cell at Kapan Jail with two other inmates. She obviously underwent a medical examination. She had a blood test, and they then told her that she was HIV positive and that she was going to develop AIDS. I remember she was writing in her diary that she was terrified. She was saying that she wanted to have a family, and now that idea was now scuppered. And then she was sort of listing all her lovers and saying, oh, she remembered using protection with that one and not with that one. And this was all in her diary, which again was leaked. I mean, I managed to get hold of it as well. I think I was probably one of the first people who managed to get hold of it.
How did the diary even get to the press?
Well, we never reveal our sources. That's the key thing. Because you do that and then you're just betraying all your journalistic principles, aren't you?
Newspaper headlines, Foxy Noxy writes diary from her cell. Secret diary of Foxy Noxy. Words in articles, perverted, many lovers, infected. I don't want to die, I want my life.
And then it turned out that she didn't have HIV, and it was just mind games being played on her by the police and the prosecution. At the time, people were saying, oh, how could you do that? How could you cover such a story? And how could you be involved? And yet, at the same time, these are the same people who are logging onto the internet first thing in the morning trying to find out the latest details, you know?
A night sky hangs over Perugia. Rain falls outside an open door. A silvery estate car drives down a dark, narrow road. Video of investigators getting out of a police car. On the backs of their anoraks is Polizia Scientifica, ERT. They open the boot of the police car. Giuliano Mignini stands with a group of other people in the street while the press take photos. Enough. You already filmed enough. Mignini puts his pipe in his mouth. A dark-haired man unlocks a metal door, and Mignini and some colleagues go inside. The investigators look around an apartment. Hello? Come over here, we're at Solicitors. The knife that was used in the murder still hadn't been found. They did a search at Solicitors' house. They went into the kitchen and found a number of knives, and they found one that matched the characteristics of the murder.
E ne ha trovato uno che rispondeva alle caratteristiche del delitto.
A spokesman reads a statement. It is a kitchen knife found in Solicito's house, which he shared with Amanda Knox. The knife is a fundamental element. Amanda's DNA was found on the handle. A police photo of the knife, a circle on the handle, Knox DNA, another circle on the blade, Kircher DNA. Meredith's DNA was found on the tip of the blade. The knife was found after a search ordered by me, says Mignini.
Questo coltello viene trovato in seguito a una perquisizione da me disposta.
The knife? I could not explain. There was no reason for my DNA to have been on a handle and Meredith's DNA to have been on the blade. It was impossible.
A headline, Foxy Noxy took part in sex attack. Video of a forensic investigator picking up the crumpled bra from Meredith's bedroom floor and looking at it with colleagues. It's soaked in blood. Therefore, she had it on when she was killed. This has been ripped. The part with the clasp is missing. Here it is. The bra clasp lies on the floor. After some time, we found that Meredith's bra clasp contained traces of Solacito's DNA. A police photo of the ripped-off clasp section of Meredith's bra, a circle on one of the clasps, Solacito DNA. A plan of the bedroom, showing the clasp near the desk. This is a very significant fact. I remember my colleagues complimenting me and saying, at this point, there's no hope for the two of them. A coastal town tightly packed with white buildings. Bari, Italy. Photos of Raphael as a boy.
I grew up in the southern part of Italy, close to the sea. I was very shy, and I didn't date girls. Who cares when you can have the new Sega Mega Drive or PlayStation? So when I was with Amanda, I was so happy to enjoy life and to enjoy my new relationship. Why should I go and murder a girl? This, for me, is a craziness. Now, yeah, I'm taking part of this nightmare, on this tragedy, and my life is going to be destroyed forever by all this, if nothing changes.
The black screen fades out to a bird's eye view of Perugia. A caption, 3 weeks after the murder. Mignini says, I remember that we were nearby Solicito's house. Lumumba was no longer a suspect, but the police told me they'd found proof Meredith had definitely been killed by three people. Press photograph Mignini.
For a bizarre case with so many twists and turns, let's start with the latest one.
Police have been unable to identify a number of fingerprints where Meredith died.
And they say they also found feces in the bathroom.
The plan of the bedroom shows Solicito and Kircher. Mignini says they found traces in Meredith's vagina. And then there were the prints. About half a dozen new circles appear on the plan of the bedroom. They were sure that the man who had left the traces was Rudy Herman Gede. A police report showing Afro-haired Gede's mugshots and fingerprints.
Rudy Gede had a bit of form for breaking and entering. Locals as well had told us that he was a slippery character, fly-by-night guy. But by this time, he'd already fled the country. And police were able to track down one of his best friends to have a Skype conversation with him.
Rudy Gede and police informant Skype call. You there? Can you hear me? Yes. The girl who's been killed. I met her the previous evening. The next day I went to her house, but we didn't do anything because neither of us had a condom. And so I went to the bathroom. After that, I heard screaming, and I quickly came out of the bathroom. I saw this guy. I didn't see his face because it was dark. Then he ran out the front door. I saw Meredith, who was bleeding. She had a cut on her throat. She was clinging on me strongly. I got scared. I was completely covered with blood. Fuck, I'm scared. I'll kill myself. Typed messages on a screen. Rudy, just one thing. Amanda had nothing to do with this. She wasn't there. Cameras flash as police bring bearded, athletic Rudy through a doorway. McNeely says an international arrest warrant was issued and he was arrested. Rudy is ushered through the throng of reporters and into the back of a black armored police van. The van drives away, followed by a police car. An empty prison visiting room. A prison audio recording.
Oh my God. Just the idea of knowing who could have done it. Like, I know him, kind of. I've seen him before with the neighbors. Like, we ran into him and they were talking to him or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I think I saw him play basketball with them once. And then I think once I saw him at my work. But, like, I don't even know his name.
A man with glasses looks through a file on his desk. Walter Biscotti, Rudy Geddes' attorney. Rudy has always maintained that he didn't kill anyone. But any good lawyer must be aware of the fact that a judge may not believe your client. The plan of the bedroom with Rudy's DNA in several places. Rudy's presence in the house is undisputed. If we'd had a trial with the other two defendants, Rudy would run the risk of being blamed for everything, and Rudy might be the only one convicted.
Rudy sarebbe stato l'unico condannato e gli altri no. Quindi decisi.
So I decided we'd go for a fast-track trial to separate the two trials.
Proprio per separare i due processi.
Cameras flash as Rudy is brought into court by police. Nick Pisa.
Once Rudy's trial begins, there is this interesting revelation. So in those initial Skype conversations, Rudy is telling his friend that Amanda is nowhere near the crime scene. He's saying that they had nothing to do with it. But then he then changes his story.
Rudy testifies, through the window I saw the silhouette of Amanda Knox leaving the house.
Allontanarsi la sagoma guardando fuori dalla finestra la sagoma di Amanda Knox.
A caption. Rudy Geddes is found guilty and sentenced to 30 years in prison for his part in the murder. On appeal, Geddes' sentence is reduced to 16 years.
No one was really that bothered about Rudy. I mean, obviously, we gave it the cursory coverage and we covered his trial, covered his sentence. But at the end of the day, there was no interest in him.
Who was more interested?
Amanda
between guards, 1.5 years later.
The cult of the girl known as Foxy Noxy is why Italians are calling this the trial of the decade.
You're talking about it, everyone is talking about it.
Sex.
A drug-fueled sex game.
A drug-fueled sex game gone wrong.
Police try to keep the press under control. Calm down. There's room enough for everybody. You have to go back to your place. Go away, please. Madam, you can't push like that. I didn't do anything to you. McNeely says, when the trial started, I thought that everything would be easy. There was direct evidence, like the DNA proof, but there's not only the DNA. Amanda was a girl that was very uninhibited.
Molto disinibita. Portava i ragazzi in casa.
She would bring boys home. Hearing Meredith's friends, if you could imagine a girl different from Amanda in every imaginable way, it would have been Meredith.
Più antitetica e sia possibile immaginare rispetto ad Amanda, questa doveva essere Meredith.
A headline: Dead girl feared Noxie's sex toy. A Taiwanese news animation of the events leading to the murder. McNeely says, that night, let's imagine what Meredith finds. She sees suddenly in her house Amanda, which is okay.
Amanda e va bene, ma...
But Solicito? And Rudy? And she's like, what? The police photo of the knife. Meredith couldn't take it anymore. She must have scolded Amanda for her lack of morals. Amanda winks at Raphael across the courtroom. Reporters hold out microphones to McNeely. How did it go today?
Amanda si deve essere sentita.
Amanda must have felt humiliated, irritated. So you want to judge my morals so harshly? Now I'm going to show you what will happen. She's a very proud girl. The Taiwanese animation has Amanda and Raphael pushing Meredith. A headline: Lucifer-like, satanic, demonic, diabolical, a witch of deception. In court, a knife is opened and Meredith's death is reenacted. There's a first clash, and then there's a crescendo of attacks. The animation shows Meredith on the floor with Amanda, Raphael and Rudy over her. Raphael plunged the knife down repeatedly. I'm convinced that Solecito and Rudy were trying to indulge Amanda in every possible way that night, says Mignini. Pleasure at any cost. This is at the heart of most crimes. Mignini watches from the doorway of the courtroom. A guard leads Amanda away.
After nearly a year of testimony, Italy's so-called trial of the century has come to a close.
Amanda Knox may know her fate as early as tomorrow. There may be a verdict.
Amanda is ushered out of the courtroom. A caption: 2 years after the murder. Verdict day. A black armored police van drives through town. Reporters film it. Videoed from above, Amanda is brought out of the back of the van by guards.
Amanda! Amanda!
Cameras flash as Amanda's brought through a doorway into the courtroom. The moment before the court reads the verdict is one of the most tense moments one can experience in life, especially for the defendant, because it is about their destiny. Asking for the conviction, such a severe penalty of two young people on a human level, costs a lot. Amanda waits, her head bowed. I look at myself in the mirror, and I'm lucky to not be ashamed of myself. There's no doubt about the guilt of the pair. The people in court stand as a judge and a colleague come in their robes. They take their seats, and the court sits too. The judge speaks into a microphone. Please, there are too many cameras. A policeman ushers reporters back. Please, please. A reporter says, one cannot get in. The corridor outside is jammed with reporters and camera crew, packed like sardines. The street outside the court is also swarming with people. Some reporters hold microphones up to a loudspeaker, which relays proceedings in the courtroom. Given articles 533 and 535 of the Penal Proceedings Code, we declare Knox, Amanda Marie and Solecito Raphael guilty of the crimes charged. They are convicted to a sentence of 26 years in prison for Knox and a sentence of 25 years for Solecito. Mignini and some others come out of the court building into the night and force their way through the throng of reporters.
With the white-hot glare of reporters and cameras, Amanda was led away in a black van just moments after the verdict was read.
A man in the crowd says, she's a murderer, she's a liar.
È un'assassina, è una furba.
The verdict floored an unsuspecting Knox family. So convinced were they of their daughter's innocence, they'd brought her younger sisters along to court.
When do you hope to lodge an appeal, sir?
The second we can.
Kirchhoff family press conference. Reporters fill the room as Meredith's family sit behind microphones.
Everyone in the room here obviously associates Meredith with a tragic event, but we would prefer not to remember her in that way.
It does bring just that little bit of justice for us, for her.
But ultimately, you know, we are pleased with the decision, but it's not a time, you know, it's not a time for celebration at the end of the day.
Meredith's dark-haired sister keeps a calm demeanour as she looks at the press. Mignini stands on a balcony, smiling contentedly, as he looks out over the tranquil, hilly landscape of Perugia.
Di solito si dice che nemo profeta.
Normally people say that nobody is a prophet in his own country. But that's not what I experienced. Complete strangers would come up to me and ask to shake my hand. They would congratulate me.
Stringermi la mano e mi fai complimenti.
It gives me satisfaction because Perugia is my little homeland. Mignini walks along a peaceful pedestrian street. Sunlight spills through thin branches in an olive grove. A view from a hill of the complex of white prison buildings. A barred iron door is closed and locked. A guard walks along the polished floor of an empty corridor.
Suddenly I found myself tossed into this dark place.
A grill over a prison window which looks out into the night.
I was so scared. Like, who do you turn to? What do you do?
Dark hills in the distance.
I thought about suicide. I thought about all the ways that I could do it. Me not coming home again until I'm in my 50s. Until members of my family have died. I was poisoned.
Sitting in front of a dark backdrop, tearful Amanda shakes her head.
I don't know what else to say.
She looks down emotionally. A grey, cloudy sky over the tightly packed buildings of Seattle. The tall, futuristic Space Needle at the forefront. University graduates wearing black gowns and mortarboards stand at a ceremony. They throw their mortarboards into the air. A photographer takes photos of each graduate as they pass. A barred prison door.
I spent almost 6 months in solitary confinement. I was getting into depression. Who can help me? Who can take me off from this? I was thinking about Amanda, and I wanted to send her flowers for her birthday to say, I'm here, I'm by your side. I still have feelings for you. But she clearly told me that her feelings were completely changed.
A tinted photo of Raphael kissing Amanda.
That moment was kind of bitter. Even though I knew her only for 5 days, that 5 days were everything.
Various pictures of Raphael and Amanda kissing, with different tints and effects put over them. A white caption on a black screen. 3 years after the murder, Knox and Solicito's appeals trial begins. Guards in black tunics and blue berets usher Amanda through a doorway in a corridor while the press take photos. Raphael in a white hoodie is brought out of the back of a black police van. Amanda is brought into the courtroom.
The convicted killer, Amanda Knox, was back in court today. They called her Foxy Noxy. Looked a little more pale today, skinnier than had been in the past. Maybe he could use hair and makeup, but I guess you don't get that in jail.
In an unexpected plea to the court, Knox delivered a tear-filled declaration of innocence.
I never expected to find myself here, convicted of a crime I didn't commit. To Meredith's family, I'm very sorry that Meredith isn't here anymore. I can't possibly know how you feel, but I too have little sisters. The idea of their suffering and never seeing them again terrifies me. Amanda sits beside her legal representative and lays her head on his shoulder. The journalists and camera crews come out of the courtroom.
A legal victory for American Amanda Knox, who's appealing her murder conviction in Italy. The appeals court gave the go-ahead for an independent review of crucial DNA evidence.
Among the pieces of evidence that an outside expert will now re-examine, a knife and a bra clasp, both considered crucial to Knox's conviction.
Rome, Italy. An aerial view of the old, tightly packed buildings of the city.
Sia chiaro,
Dr. Stefano Conti, independent forensic expert, says, let it be clear how easy it is to leave traces of DNA. You move your hand on your arm, that small amount of fine dust, those are all DNA traces which we spread within the area where we are in that particular moment. Therefore, a crime scene must be kept completely sterile.
Quindi la scena di un crimine deve essere assolutamente asettica.
Ciò che invece That's not what happened in this case. In the video taken by the forensic police, there was a lot of chaos. You can see clearly a coming and going of people without protective suits. Conti watches a video of Mignini and his investigators going into the house in their regular clothes. Booties were not changed, and they rarely changed their gloves. In other words, total chaos. An investigator in regular clothes smashes a window in a door with her foot.
Confusione.
Chaos that the forensic police expressed themselves.
Si è espressa.
This is absurd, really absurd. I criticized it harshly. There's unbelievable disorganization in every respect, say officers at the scene. Dr. Carla Vecchiotti, independent forensic expert, says contamination was one of the issues raised by the court. Could there be any contamination? The bra clasp was found under a small rug 46 days after the murder. Dr. Conti, after 46 days, it's possible that other people could have brought DNA traces from the hallway, the bathroom, kitchen, or other rooms into Meredith's room.
All'interno della stanza di Meredith.
In effetti, Dr. Vecchiotti. In fact, on the clasp, there's Solicito's DNA profile, but there were at least two other men. But the police never noted them as evidence. DNA must be objective. You can't interpret it for what you want it to be.
Non lo devo interpretare per come io voglio che sia.
Images of Dr. Vecchiotti working at a computer in a lab. And I must say that there were also problems with contamination in the laboratory. The forensics police definitively identified Amanda's profile on the knife. You could see it very well. It was a good profile. Two circles on the photo of the knife indicate Amanda and Meredith's DNA. But with regards to Meredith's DNA found, it was such a small amount, so scarce. When you have such scarce DNA, the likelihood of contamination is very high. The area marked Kircher DNA is now marked inconclusive. So we asked the forensic police, when analyzing the knife, did you analyze it alone, without any other evidence? And she replied no. We examined 50 of Kircher's samples at the same time. The laboratory couldn't just shut down because Kircher had died. When she reported these things, I was sure the results were because of contamination.
Di contaminazione.
Cameras flash as Amanda is brought into court.
When it came out, I mean, it was just crazy. The botched investigation and the bungled forensic work. I remember audible gasps from the press and from everyone in the court. We're all looking as journalists for that great angle or that great line, and when you see something like that, you just think, brilliant, it's manna from heaven, it really is.
Amanda Knox's hand was said to have been on that knife. It was said to have murdered the victim in this case. No DNA. What?
This is Italy, Shepard. It's a little different than we're used to.
Bunga bunga.
The
thing I can't wrap my mind around, though, is if the DNA evidence isn't credible, how did things get to this point?
You really believe that Americans should intervene at the top levels of our government?
I think the president should get involved. I think people should boycott Italy. They shouldn't go to Italy.
Walter Biscotti says, it bothered me that the American media lectured us about the law. This courthouse in 1308 housed the first faculty of law in Europe.
Era la sede della prima facoltà di giurisprudenza d'Europa.
In America in 1308, they were drawing buffaloes in caves.
I bisonti nelle caverne.
Neatly dressed Biscotti fixes the camera with a steely look. A cloudy sky over stone buildings. Pedestrians stroll past an outdoor cafe and a newsstand. Mignini says, I was irritated by all this avalanche of attacks, especially against me and the police. He sits at a table outside the cafe. The American media was focusing only on the DNA. Every piece of proof has aspects of uncertainty. That's why evidence needs to be evaluated in its entirety. I hear talk. For me, Amanda is guilty because she said too many lies.
Per me è colpevole, Amanda, perché ha detto troppe bugie.
He walks up a flight of stone steps and looks back at a town square. I have to remind you that her behavior was completely inexplicable, totally irrational. There's no doubt of this.
There's no trace of me in the room where Meredith was murdered. And there's no reliable trace of Raphael in the room where Meredith was murdered. But you're trying to find the answer in my eyes when the answer's right over there. You're looking at me. Why? These are my eyes. They're not objective evidence. What's more likely? That I get together this boyfriend that I've had and this guy who I don't even know his name, tell them to rape my roommate, and then let me stab her to death. Or that a guy who regularly committed burglaries broke into my home, found Meredith, took advantage of her, killed her, and ran off. A burglary gone wrong.
Mignini leans on the railing of a bridge, looking down. It has been said to me it could have been no one but Rudy. It's him and only him. Well, I don't think that's very fair. Dr. Conti makes notes at his desk. We absolutely cannot speak about the figure of Rudy Gede. What happened inside that room between Gede and poor Meredith wasn't part of the job assigned to me by the Court of Appeals of Perugia.
Non c'era nell'incarico assegnatomi dalla Corte di Assise di Appello di Perugia. Mi viene voglia forse di dire un qualche
I do feel compelled to say something Cicero once said. Any man is liable to make mistakes, but only the fool perseveres in error.
Commettere l'errore. Solo la persona che non vuole conoscere e che non osserva determinate cose persevera in quell'errore.
The interviewer asks Biscotti, do you think you did a good job defending Rudy? Ask the others. I don't understand. Ask the others who had a better defense, if Rudy's defense was a good defense.
Chiedetelo agli addetti ai lavori, chi è stato difeso meglio, chi se la difesa di Rudy è stata una buona difesa.
Rudy will be getting out shortly. The others still have to face a trial.
Gli altri devono ancora affrontare il processo.
4 years after the murder. Prosecution closing argument. Video of Mignini talking in court. The decision is yours to try and bring justice and defend the honor of this country, which is a sovereign state. He puts down the microphone. Evening. News vans with dishes on the roofs are parked outside court.
4 years after the brutal murder of British roommate Meredith Kircher, it's all come down to this.
Outside the courthouse, the world awaits. Frenzied journalists from around the globe, all counting down the moments until Amanda Knox's fate is revealed.
Amanda is at the courthouse and will be brought into the courtroom shortly, where she will hear the verdict read.
Guards in blue berets bring Amanda through into the courtroom. Cameras flash at Amanda, who looks almost overcome with nerves. She is taken over to her legal representative. A grey-haired judge holding a sheet of paper steps up to his seat. The judge reads from the sheet of paper. In the name of the Italian people, in review of the first trial verdict, this Court of Appeals absolves the two defendants because they did not commit the crime and orders the immediate release of Amanda Knox and Raphael Sollecito. Guards usher Raphael, who now has short hair, through the courtroom. Other guards shepherd out Amanda, who's broken down in tears. Mignini packs away his papers and picks up his coat.
The 24-year-old Seattle native collapsed into the arms of her lawyers as her family, all gathered in the courtroom, swept each other up in their arms. Outside the courthouse, however, a different reaction.
Great disappointment among people out here that Amanda Knox has been found not guilty in the murder of Meredith Kircher.
A woman screams, "It's a shame! Shut up!" A man with a megaphone talks to the crowd. The court has said that they are acquitted, but there will be the Supreme Court. Let's not give up. This is a shame. Shame, chants the crowd.
And breaking news tonight, Amanda Knox finally home. That was the plane carrying her and her family. This is actually a live picture now in a crush of media and well-wishers are waiting for her at the Seattle-Tacoma Airport.
She's there.
What's important for me to say is just thank you to everyone who's believed in me, who's defended me, who's supported my family. I just want, my family is the most important thing to me right now, and I just want to go and be with them. So thank you for being there for me.
Another young woman hugs tearful Amanda. A bird's eye view of the coastal town of Bari.
When I went back home, the first thing that I did, I was staring in the fridge. And I was looking at it like something incredibly new, like I was a primitive man. I was free, I was joyful, but all of a sudden I was dramatically depressed again, because I didn't know how to start again. Everything was new. I spent 4 years in prison, 6 months in solitary. How can I get used to this life that I didn't want?
Raphael gazes at the sea.
I was a simple computer guy. Now everybody know me. They look at me at the street, on the street. They ask me questions. They treat me like a movie star when I'm not, and I'm inside the tragedy still.
Congratulations, Amanda.
Please.
Welcome home. Welcome home, Amanda. Does it feel good to be home? What'd you miss most about Seattle?
It's really a matter of, you know, what does she do with this newfound fame? Does she write the book and move on with her life? Does she then try to go on Dancing with the Stars? I mean, that's when we're going to really see what her motivations are.
What movie offers have you received?
That's not our focus at this point in time. Our focus is her well-being.
But you're aware that, I suppose, as the longer you leave it, in a sense, the less, you know, the less money you're going to get, ultimately.
What do you mean is...
Well, you're not such... She's not such a hot property in an interview term if you wait a month.
I'm not looking at her as a hot property.
That was Amanda's father, Kurt Knox, interviewed outside his home.
I really thought that I was going to be okay.
Amanda rides in the back of a car. She comes into a magazine shop and looks at the shelves.
But I wasn't the same person to come back to Seattle. The whole world knew who I had ever had sex with. 7 men. And yet I was some heinous whore, bestial and sex-obsessed and unnatural. I get into a line at the grocery store and the person behind me is like, "Whoa! It's you. I know you." And I really want to turn to them and say, "Who the fuck are you? And you don't know me." You have to wonder, what is it that everyone really cares about? But how entertaining.
Amanda walks away from the shelves of magazines. A white caption on a black screen. 6 years after the murder, an Italian court throws out Knox and Solicito's acquittal and the pair are found guilty again. The guilty verdict focuses on circumstantial evidence, including Knox's behaviour and relationships. The new guilty verdict is appealed to Italy's Supreme Court, 8 years after the murder.
Italy's top appeals court is to rule today on whether to uphold the conviction of American Amanda Knox and her ex-boyfriend, Raffaele Sollecito, for the murder of British student Meredith Kircher.
Knox family home, Seattle, Washington. Reporters are outside. The Knox family are gathered around the TV.
Amanda Knox's Italian attorney this morning says Amanda is worried and has had a sleepless night. Meredith Kircher's family has made its wishes clear. They are convinced of Amanda's guilt and would like to see her imprisoned back where this all began, in Italy.
Knight, a reporter outside the court. It's a countdown to when the verdict should be read. Phones had to be turned off inside courtroom. They'll be turned on as soon as judge finishes reading, and then we'll learn the sentence.
Il presidente avrà terminato la lettura del dispositivo. Siamo a momenti con questa sentenza.
Raphael and Amanda both face the interviewer's camera, looking solemn.
Attenzione!
Attention! The news is that Raphael Sollecito and Amanda Knox have been exonerated.
Sono stati assolti.
The Knox family look overwhelmed with joy and relief. Amanda's on the phone. Raphael, we're free. How are you? I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy for us.
Sono così felice per te, sono così felice per noi. Okay, ti voglio bene.
Much love, and we'll talk soon. Bye.
Ciao.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
White captions on a black screen. In September 2015, the Italian Supreme Court releases its reasoning for acquitting Knox and Sollecito of murder. The court blames stunning flaws in the investigation and increased media attention for creating a frantic search for guilty parties. The justices find a complete lack of biological traces connecting Knox and Sollecito to the crime. The court said evidence still points to the guilt of Rudy Gede. Video footage of the Kirchers' suburban home in England. Arlene Kircher, Meredith's mum, is interviewed outside the house.
The first reaction was one of surprise. They've had 2 convictions. And they've had 2 acquittals now. It seems an awful long time to get such a strange verdict. 8 years So it's sort of bringing everything into disrepute.
Mrs. Kircher walks down a flight of concrete steps to her house. Nick Pisa.
I think at the end of the day, you have to point the finger at the police, really, don't you? And the prosecution. They made some really heinous errors and they got fixated on some wild theories that they were absolutely obsessed with. I mean, I know people keep saying trial by media, but I don't buy that. Maybe because I'm a journalist and I don't go for that, but...
Lurid headlines.
And I think now, looking back, I mean, some of the information that came out was just crazy, really, and it's just completely made up. But, hey, what are we supposed to do, you know? We are journalists and we are reporting what we are being told. It's not as if I can say, right, hold on a minute, I just want to double-check that myself in some other way. I mean, goodness knows how. And then I'll let my rival get in there first before me and then, hey, I've lost a scoop. It doesn't work like that, not in the news game.
Nick steps off a balcony into an apartment and closes the door behind him. Giuliano Mignini is at the altar in a quiet church, several candles burning beside him. During the trial, there was a woman who... She said I was the devil.
You are evil.
I can say that I've made mistakes, even things that I've had to confess. But we're all between good and evil. It's in our human nature.
È insito nella nostra natura umana.
A white statue of Mary.
Amanda e Sollecito.
Amanda and Sollecito, if they're innocent, I hope they're able to forget the suffering they've endured. If they're guilty, if earthly justice didn't get to them, I hope they own their guilt, because I know that life ends with a final trial, a trial with no appeals, no second chances, and no revisions. A view looking up into the ornate dome of the church roof. A boat leaves a trail of foaming white water in its wake. It's a grey, cloudy day and raindrops run down the boat's windows. The deck is wet and several wooden benches are unoccupied. Amanda stands alone, leaning on the boat's railing, gazing out at the city across the water.
I think people love monsters. And so when they get the chance, they want to see them.
Her pale, angular face is calm and placid.
It's people projecting their fears.
Strands of her dark hair waft in the wind.
They want the reassurance that they know who the bad people are and it's not them.
Amanda steps away from the boat's railing and walks away.
So maybe that's what it is. We're all afraid. And fear makes people crazy.
She blinks down at the floor, then looks to the camera and forces a smile. Amanda Knox graduated college in 2014. She now advocates for the wrongly convicted. Raphael Sollecito runs his own internet company in Bari, Italy. He also serves as a true crime expert for Italian television. Giuliano Mignini has been promoted to general prosecutor. Nick Pisa still works in journalism. Rudy Gede was recently granted day release from prison. He maintains his innocence. Audio description by Deluxe. Directed and produced by Rod Blackhurst, Brian McGinn. Produced by Mette Heidi, Stephen Robert Moore. Written by Matthew Hamacek, Brian McGinn. Director of Photography, Rod Blackhurst. Edited and co-produced by Matthew Hamacek. Executive producers Adam Del Deo, Ben Kottner, Lisa Nishimura. Original music by Saunder Jurians, Danny Bensi. Interviews in order of appearance: Amanda Knox, Raphael Sollecito, Guillermo Mignini, Nick Pisa, Walter Biscotti, Stefano Conti, Carla Vecchiotti. String Quartet No. 1 in E minor, from My Life, I Allegro Vivo Appassionato, composed by Bedrich Smetana, performed by the Apollon Quartet, recording courtesy of Cube Bohemia. Tu Vuo Fal Americano, by Renato Carasone, performed by TK, recording courtesy TK. Produced with the support from the Danish Film Institute, Film Commissioner Clara Grenning Harris. Red Digital Cinema, shot on Dragon, End Crawl. Plus Pictures APS is the author of this motion picture for the purposes of US copyright law and the Berne Convention, as well as other international laws giving effect thereto. Ownership of this motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture, or any part thereof, including soundtrack, could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Copyright 2016 Plus Pictures APS. All rights reserved. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.